Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. We come to you 7 days a week with important information from around the world. We always present these stories a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. It's a great way to learn and improve your American English skills. Today we have two things for you. First is a look at what is happening in Myanmar. It appears that the important election scheduled for the first week of November may be delayed. Then Jill Robbins is back in the classroom with another English lesson. Today she talks about some words that can be used in different ways. So let's get ready to listen and learn with VOA. An elections commission has asked Myanmar to postpone the national vote because of recent natural disasters. The Union Election Commission wants the elections, set for November 8th, delayed because of fatal flooding. More than 100 people are reported to have died in floods in Chin State and the Sagaing region. About 1.6 million people have been critically affected because of recent flooding in Myanmar. That number comes from government agencies and the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. In an emergency meeting Tuesday, only the National League for Democracy of Aung San Suu Kyi objected to the delay, party officials said. At least three parties have expressed support for the Commission's proposal to delay the elections. They are the Union Solidarity Party, the Farmers Development Party, and the National Development Party. Observers reported that three other parties said they would let the commission decide when to hold the vote. Several ethnic-based parties were invited to the emergency meeting, but did not attend. The Election Commission earlier announced that the elections would not be held in hundreds of villages. Most of these villages are in Kachin and Shan ethnic areas, where armed groups continue to resist the central government. Some observers suggest that one reason for a postponement may be political. Many observers believe the National League for Democracy will make major gains in the vote. The Election Commission is expected to make a public announcement within the next several days. Some political leaders say they believe the group will push forward with delaying the vote. The NLD won 80% of the legislative seats in the 1990 elections. But the military canceled the election results and refused to surrender power. They kept Aung San Suu Kyi under house arrest for several years. Under Myanmar's laws, the next election needs to be held 30 to 90 days before the first meeting of the next parliament. It is set for January 30th. More than 6,000 people are seeking positions in the national parliament and state or regional legislatures. The government has barred at least 75 independent or opposition party candidates, many because of the citizenship of their parents. You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Time now to learn American English. And to lead off in the classroom, here is Jill Robbins.
The English language has an interesting way of classifying words. We organize words by their function or purpose. These functions are parts of speech. You might find that a noun acts like a verb, as with the word impact. Once you would talk about something having an impact. This is the noun form of impact. Now you can say you want to impact a decision process. That is the verb form of impact. You know that an adjective modifies, describing a quality of a noun. For example, you drink a cup of hot tea. The adjective is hot and the noun is tea. What about lemon tea? Lemon is a noun, isn't it? Why is it modifying tea? English often uses nouns as adjectives to modify other nouns. For example, a car that people drive in races is a race car. A car with extra power or speed is a sports car. Nouns that modify other nouns are called adjectival nouns or noun modifiers. For our purposes, they are called attributive nouns, so we will use that term. Did you notice something unusual about the expressions with the noun car? A car used to race other cars is a race car. Both nouns are singular. A car that has power and speed is a sports car. Why is the first noun, sports, plural? A search of the internet shows us that people started using this phrase back in 1914. Cars were a new thing then. There is no rule about whether the attributive noun is singular or plural. Most of the time, it is singular. But if the combination of nouns includes a plural noun, it usually stays that way. The result is phrases like ladies' room, not lady room, for a room meant for women and girls, and bean soup, but not beans soup, for a soup made of beans. Some grammar experts think that English speakers are using more plural nouns in this way. We have arms race, benefits office, and women leaders. At times, a singular noun changes the meaning. An arts degree recognizes completion of a study program at a college or university in the humanities or liberal arts. But an art degree is a degree in the fine arts. When writing these attributive nouns in English, learners sometimes wonder about whether to use an apostrophe to show possession. Is it a ladies with an apostrophe after the S, room? No, it is a ladies' room with no apostrophe. Attributive nouns do not need the apostrophe. So we write Veterans Day, no apostrophe, in American English, and not veterans with apostrophe S after the word veteran, or veterans with an apostrophe after the S, day. That means the day is in honor of military veterans, not owned by veterans. Try to identify the attributive nouns George Harrison uses in the Beatles song, Piggies.
Everywhere there's lots of piggies living piggy lives. You can see them out for dinner with their piggy wives, clutching forks and knives to eat the bacon.
For Learning English Everyday Grammar, I'm Jill Robbins.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Is there a way to turn back the clock on aging? A new study says yes. Jonathan Evans brings us more on that story.
Exercise can make you younger. At least, it can lower your fitness age. That is the measure of how well your body works. A study of athletes in the National Senior Games found that their fitness age was more than 20 years younger than their chronological age. Tony Diamond participated in the games. Every morning, he goes to a local park and walks fast for an hour. Then, the retired Navy captain runs for an hour. 2 or 3 times a week, he goes to a gym for muscle training. Mr. Diamond won 3 medals at the 2015 National Senior Games in the road race and the race walk for his age group, 85 to 89.
My current age is 86 years old, and my fitness age is 44. I think I have such a good number because I've a lot of exercise during my life. I've been exercising since I was a little boy.
Helen White is a basketball player. She also teaches the sport to senior groups. And she plays pickleball. Pickleball uses a racket and is part badminton, tennis, and table tennis. She won a silver medal in pickleball at the 2013 National Senior Games.
I'm 62 years old, and my fitness results showed that I was 32 years.
Ms. White and Mr. Diamond are some of the 5,000 Senior Games participants who took part in the fitness age study. Pamela Peak is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Maryland. She worked on the study with Ulrich Wisloff at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. Mr. Wisloff developed a fitness calculator. Ms. Peak explains how it works.
You simply input very straightforward data. We ask you questions, your age, your height, your weight, how much you work out, your waist size, heart rate, blood pressure, and it goes on. And then you press a button and you find out what your actual fitness age is.
The National Senior Games take place every 2 years. It is a competition for athletes older than 50. The games are a variety of sports, from track and field to triathlon. This year, the average age of the people competing was 68, but their average fitness age was 43. Ms. Peak is a member of the board of the organization that runs the games. She says that many of the competitors did not start training until later in life, like Helen White.
It really wasn't until I turned 50 that I decided to become much more serious and focused about play and just make sure it's a daily part of my life.
Pamela Peak says anyone can lower their fitness age.
It doesn't matter how old you are, 20, 25, 30, who cares? All of us can lower our fitness age, especially with physical activity.
She says it is never too early or too late to start exercising and receiving its benefits. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, our weekly program of American history for people learning American English. I'm Steve Ember.
In 1850, the northern and southern states threatened to split over the issue of slavery. At that time, owning slaves was legal in the southern states. Many northerners opposed slavery, and the question remained, should slavery be legal in new territories in the western part of the country? The two sides disagreed strongly, but the issue needed to be settled. So Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky offered a compromise. Conservative Southern lawmakers rejected it. John C. Calhoun of South Carolina especially spoke against the compromise, but other lawmakers supported it, including one of the nation's top political leaders. Senator Daniel Webster of Massachusetts said the compromise was the only way to save the Union of States. 4 days after Webster's speech, Senator William Seward of New York presented his ideas to the Senate and to the nation. Seward was a Northerner. He said he opposed any compromise with the South. He said he did not want slavery in the new Western territories, and he called for a national policy to start peacefully ending slavery everywhere. Seward criticized Daniel Webster for speaking against abolition societies. He said such groups represented a moral movement that could not be stopped. He said the movement would continue until all the slaves in America were free. Seward then criticized John C. Calhoun. He denounced Calhoun's demands for a political balance between the North and South. He said this forced balance would change the United States from a united national democracy to an alliance of independent states. In such a system, he said, the minority would be able to veto actions of the majority. A few weeks after Seward spoke, John C. Calhoun died. One newspaper in Calhoun's home state said, "The senator's death is best for the country and his own honor. The slavery question will now be settled." Calhoun would have blocked a settlement. In fact, many lawmakers had come to support the idea of Senator Henry Clay's compromise, but they could not agree on which parts of it to pass first. Southern supporters were afraid that if a statehood bill for California was passed first, then Northerners would refuse to pass the other parts of the compromise. So Southerners wanted to include all parts in one bill. A committee of 13 men was named to write a bill based on Henry Clay's compromise. The committee had 6 members from slave states and 6 from free states. Senator Clay was named to lead it. 3 weeks later, the committee offered its bill. It was much like the compromise Clay had first proposed. It made California a free state. It created territorial governments for New Mexico and Utah. It settled the border dispute between Texas and New Mexico. It ended the slave trade in the nation's capital, the District of Columbia, and it urged approval of a new law dealing with runaway slaves. For about a month, the bill seemed to have the support of President Zachary Taylor. But then the president made it clear that he would do everything he could to defeat it. Taylor did not think the nation was in crisis. He did not believe the dispute over slavery was as serious as others did. He had his own plan to settle one part of the dispute. He would make the new territory of California a free state. There, slavery would be banned. Taylor's plan did not, however, settle other parts of the dispute. It said nothing about laws on escaped slaves. It said nothing about slavery in the District of Columbia. It also said nothing about the border dispute between Texas and New Mexico. Senator Clay, who had offered the compromise, questioned President Taylor's limited proposal. Clay said, "Now, what is the plan of the president? Here are five problems, five wounds that are bleeding and threatening the life of the republic. What is the president's plan? Is it to heal all these wounds? No such thing. It is to heal one of the five and to leave the other four to bleed more than ever." While the debate continued in Washington, the situation in Texas and New Mexico got worse. Texas claimed a large part of New Mexico, including the capital, Santa Fe. Early in 1850, Texas sent a representative to Santa Fe to take control of the government. The United States military commander in New Mexico advised the people not to recognize the man. The governor of Texas was furious. He decided to send state soldiers to enforce Texas's claims in New Mexico. He said, "If trouble broke out, the United States government would be to blame." President Taylor rejected Texas's claims. He told his Secretary of War to send an order to the military commander in New Mexico. The commander was to use force to oppose any attempt by Texas to seize the territory. The Secretary of War said he would not send such an order. He believed that if fighting began, Southerners would hurry to the aid of Texas. And that, he thought, might be the start of a Southern struggle against the federal government. In a short time, the North and South would be at war. So the Secretary of War refused to sign the order. President Taylor answered sharply, "Then I will sign the order myself." Taylor had been a general before becoming president. He said he would take command of the army himself to enforce the law. And he said he was willing to hang anyone who rebelled against the Union. President Taylor began writing a message to Congress on the situation. He never finished it. On July 4, 1850, Taylor attended an outdoor Independence Day ceremony. The event was held on the grounds where a monument to America's first president, George Washington, was being built. The day was very hot, and Taylor stood for a long time in the burning sun. That night, he became sick with pains in his stomach. Doctors were called to the White House, but none of their treatments worked. 5 days later, President Zachary Taylor died. His vice president, Millard Fillmore, was sworn in as president. Millard Fillmore was from New York State. His family was poor. His early education came not from school teachers, but from whatever books he could find. Later, Fillmore was able to study law. he became a successful lawyer. He also served in the United States Congress for 8 years. The Whig Party chose him as its candidate for vice president in the election of 1848. He served in the office for about a year and a half before the death of President Taylor. Fillmore had disagreed with Taylor over the Congressional Compromise on Slavery and the Western Territories. Unlike Taylor, Fillmore truly believed that the nation was facing a crisis, and he truly believed the compromise would help save the Union. Now, as president, Fillmore offered his complete support to the compromise bill. Its chances of passing looked better than ever. Fillmore asked the old cabinet to resign. He named his own cabinet members. All were strong supporters of the Union. All supported the compromise. Congress debated the compromise bill throughout the summer of 1850. The bill included several proposals. Supporters decided not to vote on the proposals as one piece of legislation. They saw a better chance of success by trying to pass each proposal separately. Their idea worked. By the end of September, both the Senate and House of Representatives had approved all parts of the 1850 Compromise. President Fillmore signed them into law. One part of the compromise permitted California to enter the Union as a free state. One established territorial governments in New Mexico and Utah. One settled the dispute between Texas and New Mexico. Another ended the slave trade in the District of Columbia. Many happy celebrations took place when Americans heard that President Fillmore had signed the 1850 Compromise. Many people believed the problem of slavery had been solved. They believed the Union had been saved. Others, however, believed the problem only had been postponed. They hoped the delay would give reasonable people of the North and South time to find a permanent answer to the issue of slavery. Time was running out. It was true that the 1850 Compromise had ended a national crisis, but both Northern and Southern extremists remained bitter. Those opposed to slavery believed the compromise law on runaway slaves violated the Constitution. The issue of slavery was linked to the issue of secession. Did states have the right to leave the Union? If Southern states rejected all compromises on slavery, did they have the right to secede? The signing of the 1850 Compromise cooled the debate for a time, but disagreement on the issues was deep. It would continue to build over the next 10 years. How the situation affected slaves themselves will be our story next week. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.